Hello, welcome to this week's episode of Analyzing Anfield. I'm Josh Williams, I'm joined by Mo Stewart as always. Mo, how are you doing, mate?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to talking about, or trying to find some interesting things to talk about that game. Another week of comfortable victories. And it's weird, sometimes when we're playing really well, it does make it harder to find things to talk about than easier.
Yeah, well, that probably is a talking point in itself, really, when you think about it. Like the fact that, you know, last season, these games were not particularly easy for Liverpool. Some of them were struggles. We got done going the opposite way a lot of the time and things like that. And this season, it's not happening as much. And it looks like it's because the opposition isn't really trying almost. But we know that they will try if they can get in because of last season, but they're not. And it's testament to Liverpool's rebuild over the summer, really.
It really is. And to be honest, I did feel a little bit sorry for Nottingham Forest because I think their game plan was very much hamstrung by the fact they didn't have Chris Wood and they didn't have Taiwo Awoniyi fit. So they had to basically send Anthony Langer up there to just run around, and he just got little boyed by Virgil quite a few times. And they didn't really pose much of a threat until really late on in the game when it was already over. But that is still a testament to Liverpool, and that is exactly what we wanted to do, because obviously, even though they didn't have an attacking threat, they were definitely there to make it difficult for us. And yet, I still didn't feel like there was ever a period where they were stifling us, they were stopping our attacks. We were able to rain shots in first half and the second half, get goals, and just do what we wanted, really, attacking-wise.
Yeah, I think what I was most impressed by was just the level of control that we had over the game and the fact that, like, we kind of removed any possibility of it being a bit of a coin flip. You know, when you just kind of take care of the performance to such an extent that the result just follows suit. It was one of them. You know, if it was a 3-0 win, and in terms of expected goals, it was 3.2 against 0.4. You know, if you post 3.2 XG every week and concede 0.4, it's got to go very wrong for you to lose even once over the course of a season. I mean, Liverpool won't post that every week.
No.
But that's the kind of performance that you want to post against basically the bottom 10. If you can take care of the bottom 10, that's basically over the course of a full season, 60 points that you've got in the bag. You know, and they kind of say, don't they beat the dross and you win the league? You know, that kind of line. But I think Liverpool are kind of taking care of that a bit better this season.
They are. And I think particularly at home, you look at the numbers in terms that you said we're not going to post a 3xG every week. We are posting around about a goal and just under in XG against a week. And that's against even the likes of the West Ham and Aston Villa. It's like, we've had five home games a season. We conceded two goals. And we're not conceding a lot of shots. We're not conceding a lot of counterattacks. All of those numbers are down. So I think it's really hard to say that the new system isn't working exactly the way we want it to, because as we said, we're still scoring lots of goals and creating chances, but we're not conceding as many. I think if you think about the moments in games, some of the games we've had, you think about moments where we've looked a little bit wobbly defensively, maybe there's someone's made a loose pass or two, but what the numbers over the course of a 90 minutes are telling you is that those moments are a lot rarer than they used to be, and we're able to deal with them.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Liverpool's attacking numbers in particular, looking at the season as a whole, we've definitely got the best attack in the league. Obviously, we've scored a fair few, but you know, on top of that, in terms of XG, this is non-penalty XG. We're currently second in the league, and that's despite playing a fair amount of minutes with 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and to the extent where we're literally just not even attacking at one point to space. You know, we literally didn't have a forward on the pitch at one point. The only side above us is Newcastle. I have a feeling that will slightly change as the season goes on. Brentford, for example, right now are above Manchester City in terms of XG per 90, which is curious. But Liverpool's attack is definitely just fine. And on the defensive side, I think we will start to look better in the numbers because we are facing easier opposition in the next couple of weeks. And hopefully we won't suffer a red card every 20 minutes.
Hopefully.
Yeah, but overall, Liverpool look like the former selves, really.
They look like a serious football team, Josh. Yeah. And this is what we were praying that we were going to see this season. And I don't know, you always want to be cautious in the kind of heaping praise on them, particularly at early stages. But I think, as we've continued to say, you can't look at what you've seen and not be encouraged and think that if this can continue, then we are going to be in the mix for all of the big things. I think the next few weeks is going to be interesting to me because we have a couple more games like the one at Forest, because it wasn't just the fact that it was a game against the Dross, as we call it, at home. It was a game on a Sunday afternoon. It wasn't on telly. It was the same day as the Manchester derby. No one was really talking about Liverpool.
Yeah.
And in those situations, the only way you become the story is if you let yourself become the story. And we've seen Liverpool do that in the past, but this time we weren't. We weren't interested in letting ourselves become the story. We just wanted to get the job done and move on. And we can do that again and again. And if you look at some of the other teams around us who've got big games coming up, we're going to be able to potentially make ground just by staying at the level we're at.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I found interesting about the game was, despite Liverpool's dominance, there was a point in the match where we still hadn't broken through yet, and it was still 0-0 despite the territory that we had, despite the possession that we had. And the breakthrough ends up coming from, despite us seeing so much of the ball, the breakthrough comes through basically a counter-attack.
Yeah.
You know, shortly after regaining the ball, I think it's Murillo for the first one. Just goes on this marauding.
He tries to do a Matip.
To be fair, he pulled it off the other week. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did.
That was a serious run. And, by the way, he's left-footed.
That's
just a little curious one to throw in there. I think he's about 20.
You're making marks of literally every left-footed player in the league.
Yeah. Any left-footed player, like, just immediately put him on the shortlist. I think I've seen a thing, and I think 75% of players in the Premier League are right-footed.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
So it just showcases like how rare these left-footers are, especially the good ones.
Yeah,
you know, throw Salah in there, to be honest, in terms of just being this complete unicorn. But yeah, Murillo tried to do what he did against Palace at Anfield. Didn't really work as well. Liverpool regained the ball and instantly just kill it on the opposite side.
Yeah.
But what I found interesting was all three of Liverpool's goals, despite the dominance, where scored in transition, you know, typical Klopp goals where we regain the ball and punish it immediately. I tweeted it and the responses that I got, some of the people just didn't get what I meant, to be honest. People were saying like, what? Like, and asking if it was a criticism and things like that. And it's not a criticism by any means, but it is interesting that,
it is interesting,
you know, when it comes to this low block thing, it's never been Liverpool's forte, really, under Klopp. Klopp's always preferred open spaces and things like that. Are Liverpool going to be tested? You know, when it comes to that sort of... We've got Luton next, for example. We've got a relatively easy run coming.
Whether it's the legendary Lionesses, grassroots or expert analysis of the women's leagues, Women's Football News has it all covered. A brand new monthly magazine packed with news, interviews and expert opinion. Don't miss Women's Football News. Pick up a copy today from participating retailers. Women's football is here to stay, and so are we.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It depends on how you look at it, because I think what it says to me is that Liverpool are trying to find new ways to beat this low block, because essentially the problem with the low block is that none of them move. But what we're seeing with the fact that against Everton and against Nottingham Forest, we were able to create quite a few transition chances, is the fact that we were able to get them to move. Because essentially, it's easier to attack their goal when there's less of them around their goal. So the more we can get them to leave their goal, the better it is for us. And yet, they were steadfastly not wanting to do that, and yet we still allowed them to do that. And part of that is the way that we pass it around the back. We're trying to, you know, call it baiting the press. Sometimes you're trying to draw a team out and get it around them. But sometimes it can just be as simple as letting them have the ball for like 90 seconds and maybe one of them goes, oh, hang on a minute, we can make something here, and then bang. And I think the thing about it as well, when you're playing against a team who is in a low block, they aren't going to be tempted out that many times. So when you do get them there, you have to make sure that you capitalise on it. And the thing that I liked about the goals is that there was a lot of our attacks, there was a clear sense that when we broke, So there wasn't a build-up of attack. When it was a sharp attack, everybody still knew what they wanted to do. Everybody knew what they were supposed to do. There's a really good piece on .com that Emmett did talking about Nunes' diagonal runs and comparing them to the runs he used to make when he was at Benfica and a little bit to the runs Edinson Cavani makes. And it's fascinating to me because there's something that I'd noticed about the way that we play on the right-hand side in general. And Szoboszlai's drawn a lot of praise for the way he runs and stuff, but I think it's more than just him. I think it's a different tactic we're using. If you think about the old triangle with Henderson, Trent and Salah, there was a lot of overlapping, whether it was Trent to kind of put a ball in or it was Henderson. And the point was is that you overlap, you try to draw the second defender who's already on Salah to go with you, and then you try to cross the ball in from there. What we're seeing at the moment is a lot more underlapping. So you'll have a guy, either it's Nunes or Szoboszlai, making a diagonal run across the front of Salah. And the difference to that is that it means that when Salah does play the ball through, the guy receiving it is close to the goal. He's on the edge of the penalty area rather than at the corner flag. And we saw that with the second goal, because from where Szoboszlai was, it's a lot harder for the defenders to cut out the ball straight to Nunes. And you've got Nunes, or you've got a Jota, or even sometimes it's been Ryan Gravenberch, who when that move makes and when Nunes goes across to wide, they will drive into the centre. So there's always someone else in there to receive that ball. And the way that we've done it so many times tells me it's something that we're working on. And even, like I say, just the difference of underlapping as opposed to overlapping just presents a whole different set of problems to the defenders. And I think it's really fascinating the way we've done it, because Salah's still creative enough to get the ball between the two defenders to the guy running. As we've seen so many times, he'll do either a little flick or he'll just nutmeg somebody or something. But he'll still be able to get them into that position. And then once he's played the ball, he can then move into the centre as well. It's just a little tweak that I think has actually made a quite big difference.
Yeah, well, we've seen a few of them over the past like 6 months or so. Klopp's kind of, you know, we've talked about building this new team and a lot of it consists of like slightly new dynamics compared to the past. You know, losing Firmino and integrating Nunes is a massive, massive change. Salah maybe playing a little bit wider, having a bit more of a technical midfield department and having four players in there as opposed to three. Robertson kind of dovetailing between being this high-flying fullback and a wide centre-back, which is two polar opposite roles really that he's doing at once. But it's interesting that, as I said, despite all that, Liverpool score three goals using their kind of trademark approach over the past couple of years since Klopp came in, which is just thriving in all the transition. And I've got a quote here from Steve. Is it Steve Cooper?
Yes.
Steve Cooper after the game. Mine went then. And he spoke about, like, you know, what happened. And he said, whatever team we would have put out and whatever formation, one thing that was for sure today was that we needed to be on a small pitch. The moment you open up the pitch against Liverpool, they're one of the best teams in the world, some of the best players in the world. So regardless of the plan was to keep the game on a small pitch. And he did that for the most part, and it kind of, I wouldn't say it stifled Liverpool. I do think we would have found a breakthrough eventually. But I think it is testament just to how cutthroat Liverpool can be, even without Mane and Firmino in the team anymore. You know, it's different players now. Klopp's kind of recruited in a way where Liverpool have retained that like real ruthless streak on the break, know, really terrifying. Like, another thing Steve Cooper said was, if you look at the goals, turnovers in the middle of the pitch, we turn the ball over, open up the pitch, and they did what we planned for them not to do. So obviously going into the game planning above all else, stop Liverpool on the transition, stop Liverpool exploiting open spaces, because that's when they're most clinical. I think Gary O'Neill said a couple of weeks ago that it's something along the lines of Liverpool thrive when the game is chaotic, when it's like chaotic and that. We're going to keep getting tested with teams kind of trying to kill that element of the game and our kind of ability to break down a low block. We'll keep getting tested. Mm-hmm. But I think our ability to do that is better than people think.
I do. As well.
We've got the dominance over the pitch, got the control of the ball, and we've got creators everywhere. I do think we will continue to find ways to score. I don't think goals will be a problem for us this season, regardless of what we come up against.
No, I agree. And I think you only have to look at the fact that in the first half, they were trying to do, obviously in the first half, when you come to a game like away at Liverpool, everybody's intense. Everybody's very tight and disciplined to the game plan. Darwin Nunez still got 5 shots in the first half.
Yeah.
On his own.
He had a great game, Zufa.
He did have a great game. But what that means is that you can be at your very best and it's still not good enough. And Liverpool now are a side who know that they're going to have the ability to create chances against nearly anyone. And they have the patience to know that if they don't score in the first period, the first wave of dominance, then they have the ability to wait for the second wave. It's not previously like... One of the things that annoyed me about Liverpool in last season was that when they were having a good moment in the game and then they didn't score, you could almost sense the moment when they were like, oh God, I bet we can see one now. Or almost collectively, and then the other team would take the initiative. We don't really do that so much anymore. And I think that's another thing about the belief in our ability to continue to create chances against whoever and to continue to convert them.
I mean, you touched on Nunez there. I do think he was one of Liverpool's better players on the day. I think he is a joy to watch from you. I think I love watching him. And I like to think that since he came in, we've kind of painted the specific picture of what it will look like when he starts to deliver for Liverpool tactically.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are starting to see the product of that now. Maybe a little bit more as well in terms of like past 2 games, I think in particular. He's been dropping deep at times, and he has looked good. He's looked a lot better than he did last year. But in terms of being this kind of poacher that Liverpool signed, this magnet for chances, again, he's top of the Premier League so far for shots per 90. 4.9 shots per 90 he's averaging, followed by Callum Wilson on 4. Eberechi Eze is next on 3.9.
He hasn't played that many games though, as he's been in
No. Erling Haaland on 3.7. So Nunez still very much a shot monster, and are we starting to see the best of him finally?
Yes, and I think the point you made about him dropping deep and what alluded to what I was saying before about him making those Benfica runs, as I call them, are really the evidence of that, because what that tells you is that his teammates are starting to be able to predict what he's going to do. So they know the game plan as well as he does. Now they trust him that he's going to deliver on that game plan. So because they trust him to do their thing, his thing, they can then do their things, as I was saying before. So you had in the last game, Jota, obviously when Nunez goes wide into the channel and shoots, Jota knows he needs to get himself in the 6-yard area. He does, he gets a goal. I think you saw quite a few times in that first game, and I noticed it first against Toulouse, that Ryan Gravenberch has taken it upon himself to be that man whenever he sees the central striker go right, because I saw him do it a couple of times when Gakpo was on the pitch. When the central striker goes out of that 9 position, he's taken it upon himself to become central. And I think it's another one of those things where now we know what Nunez likes to do. Now we know how devastating he can be. We can work around it and say, okay, well, if you like to do this, then we can get someone in here to do this. And it's rather than him just becoming a nuisance and messing the game up and then us dropping from the scraps, we're now able to channel him into our game plan, and so he's becoming even more effective.
Yeah, I think it's got to a point now where like he's getting his strengths kind of emphasised and placed in the spotlight, whereas his flaws, which to be fair look even more improved so far this season, are kind of taking the spotlight a bit less. Like he's not being asked to play on the flanks anymore, for example, even though he's drifting over there a little bit. He's not occupying 10 spaces as much. He's had 23 shots so far in the Premier League this season, and only 5 of them have been from outside the area. So he's kind of picking up, you know, really like if you look at his efforts there, Mo, you know, his efforts really kind of central on the penalty spot. That's exactly where you want him. And it's difficult to get chances in that area, but Nunez has got that kind of movement, Cavani element about him, where he's just in the right spot at the right time.
And he's doing all of this other stuff and without it being to the detriment of him getting in the middle, because if you think back to some of the previous strikers we had, I think about that was always the knock on Firmino, wasn't it? Is that he was able to do lots of other link-up play and distraction play, but it was to the cost of him getting on the end of chances occasionally. Nunez is still in and around the penalty box. And as I said, the times when he isn't, other players are using him moving as their trigger to get in there. So I just think system-wise, we're able to like you say, maximize the things that he does. I think the next thing for me, the next thing that we can add in is I don't think we're still really making the most of his heading ability.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, he did have a couple of close-headed chances in the Forest game, one he feels like he should have done better with. But I do think in terms of occasionally mixing up with an early cross into the box and having him challenge the defenders when they're not as set, I think that's another thing that we can take advantage of.
Well, that is kind of a bit of an issue attached to the new system, really, isn't it? In terms of, obviously, the previous system, it was very high-flying fullbacks, and those fullbacks would feed the strikers ahead of them, mainly through crosses because they were occupying the flanks and hugging the touchline and things like that. I think this season, I think I'm right in saying, I'll double check it now, but Liverpool are just simply crossing a lot less than ever before. And that's because on the right, you've got Trent inverting into the centre of the pitch. And on the left, you've got Robertson staying back a bit more than he ever has. And it's due to the nature of the new system and how we're a bit more narrow nowadays and a bit more intricate maybe. It's a bit more about finding players between the lines and cute little passes around the corner and stuff like that. So I suppose that is a way in which if you can kind of keep the current system that we've got but somehow incorporate the best deliveries.
I think when you are up against a team who feel like they know exactly what you want to do and you kind of know exactly how they're going to defend against them, it's good to have something else to throw in there. And I think particular, when you think about the fact that we're going to be seeing a lot of Kostas Tsimikas. If you think about what his strengths are from an attacking wise, it is more the early cross unexpected rather than him beating three players and flying down the wing for a cutback from the byline. So I think, again, if we're playing a lot with Kostas, there's going to be times when he's in space just around the edge of the centre circle. And if he can start to look for early balls then that's something that I think we can really take advantage of.
Yeah, I'm just checking now. So we averaged 16.6. So we're averaging 16.6 crosses per 90 so far this season. When we won the league, it was up at about 24 per 90. So that's a fair drop.
Yeah, that's significant.
And again, I think it's a tactical thing. I think it's largely intentional. But as you say, when you've got a 6'2" striker in there who's good in the air, good at finding a little pocket of space, really intense and powerful and stuff, you probably do want to feed him that way a lot more. Yeah. But having said that, the way in which he scored his goal, I loved. The tap-ins, for me, mate, is his bag.
Yeah.
That's what he needs. He needs them little tap-ins from literally 2 yards out. And that's for me, is kind of what Haaland's benefited from.
Yes.
City. Nunes is that kind of player. And obviously, Szoboszlai doing the underlap and getting to the byline and allowing that to happen. It'd be nice if we could create them on a regular basis for Nunes. And
I think that's the plan, definitely. And I think the thing about those is it is great for confidence because obviously the percentage probability of scoring is higher when you're likely in the 6 yard box around the goal line. But also it's a win for the system because if every system, every kind of move, you want to have the highest chance of scoring. When the person who takes the shot, you want it to be almost inevitable as a goal. And if you're taking the shot 3 yards out, then you're almost always in the situation where unless you're literally right in front of the goalkeeper, then you're in that situation. So the plan has worked. And that's kind of not just a win for the striker, it's a win for everybody.
So is he in a position now then, if we time at Nunes again, is he kind of in a position now where he is the man, as in the regular starter? And what I say that specifically thinking, it's just 10 November today.
Mm-hmm.
Liverpool play tonight, for those who are listening. We haven't actually seen him in the Carabao Cup yet. But later this month, we have Manchester City.
Yes, we do.
Away from home. Is he starting in there?
I think so.
That would be my question.
I think so. I think if you think about what the alternative would have been previously, it would have been Cody Gakpo. And we've seen from when Klopp's played Gakpo as the nine, it is a very different job that he's doing. He is coming deeper a lot. And I think against Manchester City, we're going to want to occupy them as much as possible. We're going to want to stretch as much as possible because they all want to keep it compact as they always do. And so I do think it makes sense to have Nunes. I think we'll probably see Gakpo start tonight. I think in terms of his comeback from injury,
yeah, I agree.
Feels like the move. But I do think that he is now in a situation, Gakpo, where Nunes was around the back end of last season, where he's had some good things, but in order to get to that next level, there's a few things he needs to work on. And I think coming back from injury, being able to build up little bits here and there to get into the starts, I think is going to help him. In the meantime, obviously, it's funny when we talk about Nunes being the main man because Mo Salah's still sitting over there.
Yeah.
But I think the way that Salah's playing is very much like he is buying into the idea of the partnership of the two.
Yeah,
of them.
I agree. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of helping because it's like, who really is the main man? And there's not one guy who, as a defence, you can zero in on. And I mean, people used to say that about Mane and Salah, isn't it? It's like, if you put all your resources onto Mo Salah, Sadio Mane's over there. Yeah. And that's where I think we want to get to. In terms of leading the line in big games, I think that Nunes is the one at the moment, yeah.
I think he's definitely the one at the moment. I think he will start against Luton, for example, and probably Brentford after that. But in terms of City, that would be the big show of faith for me.
Yeah,
I think in an attacking sense, you would want him on the pitch. And if you think of it from the perspective of maybe a Ruben Diaz, you would want to see Nunes least, surely, because he's difficult to handle. He's a handful, isn't he? But it goes back. It's City away from home. Pep Guardiola team. Compactness is everything. Defensive pressing is everything. Nunes is probably still beneath Gakpo, I think, in that department specifically. Mm-hmm. So it would be... I would understand if Klopp went for Gakpo or a Jota simply because of the defensive side.
I would understand, but I would counter, or if I was in the common room with him, I would say to him that we've been at our best against City when we've tried to dictate to them, home and away.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that the times when we've gone in, tried to change us to try to get the best out of them, it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
So I think that having trust in your plan A, and as we were saying before, it's a very different game against Nottingham Forest, but there's trust and belief that we are going to be able to create the chances against most opponents. I think you have to believe in your plan A that it's going to be good enough to go out there. And City are still a very good football team. City are still going to be the team to be in the league over the course of 38. But I don't think the City of this season are as scary as the City of last season. So I think Liverpool will be able to go in there with confidence that we can cause them more problems than we have done previously.
Especially if De Bruyne's not playing.
Exactly.
That's a good point. But yeah, I think for me, Nunes is certainly looking like the man. But for me, I won't actually say, yes, he's now the guy until he starts regularly in games like that.
Yeah.
For me. Because say, for example, if you look at City and Haaland, Haaland is a bit of a passenger for them. But because of how much of a killer he is, Guardiola plays him every single week. Haaland doesn't come out the team when City goes to Anfield.
No.
Or, you know, away to Old Trafford or whatever. Nunes, so far at least, has come out the team in those big games. And I think it's because of his defensive awareness and his ability to kind of execute those instructions in them big games when it's a bit more important to stay compact.
I think if you compare it as well, though, I mean, particularly more last season than this season, the team around the other 10 for City are so well drilled, or were so well drilled, that it's easier for them to wear the deficiencies that you get with Haaland compared to Liverpool. We were pretty much a shambles. Think about it. So
I mean, we didn't have a midfield.
No, exactly.
It's nobody in the middle of the park.
So your margin of error decreases to nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas again, now I think because we have more faith in the structure beneath it, we can afford to be more okay. We're going to hurt you rather than being scared of you hurting us.
Yeah, I think if Liverpool can obviously field a really ideally a first choice midfield to face City, you know, getting ahead of himself here looking at City, but if that's in place, maybe then you can accommodate Nunes. But maybe one of the reasons he's come out the team past couple of months, last season and things like that, for these big games is because we didn't have the midfield to accommodate him.
Yeah.
Because we just kind of got cut open regardless of who played there. But it's one to keep an eye on anyway. I mean, I fancy him to do well against Luton on the weekend. Nunes, Got Brentford after that at Anfield. I think he could do well there as well. So we're finally entering that period now where we're kind of done talking about the tackle problems attached to him, and we're now kind of able to just enjoy him because he's no longer a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, there's no longer something that there's that, you know, sometimes you have that nagging feeling where it's like it's good but it's not quite right. I don't think that I'm about that with them anymore.
Yeah. Away from Liverpool, one of the interesting matches, I suppose, that's getting played this weekend is the Copa Libertadores final. Yes. Are you going to watch?
I am going to watch, yes.
Well, it's on decent time, UK time, isn't it? It's like 8 p.m., is it? Mm-hmm. Something like that. And one of the reasons it's interesting is because there's a few players on the pitch, one in particular, who Liverpool have been linked with in recent months. One of them is Andre, playing for Fluminense, haven't won it before. I'm right in saying this is their first time potentially winning it.
Well, yeah, I think they've been in one final and lost it. So this is.
Yeah, and they're up against Boca Juniors, who. Were they in the final last year?
I'm not sure if it was last year, but they've been. I mean, obviously they're regular winners.
But they've only been in the final last year, can't remember who it was against. But they have Ezequiel Fernandez in the middle of the park as well, who Liverpool have been slightly linked with, but less so. But it's. For scouting purposes, I suppose, it's definitely one to watch.
Oh, yeah. It's fascinating. And I'm going to be trying hard to watch the game as a whole rather than focusing on those two players. But obviously, they are the ones who Liverpool have been linked with. And I think as much as we've all been talking about how our midfield's great now and it's fixed to a certain extent, there is still the feeling that there is at least maybe one more to come in, one more potential option at defensive midfield. And the interesting thing for me about this Andre and Ezequiel Fernandez thing is that they essentially play the same position, but they do it very different ways.
Yeah.
Because Fluminense play with the double pivot and three attacking players in front of them, whereas Boca are more on the 4-4-2. But essentially what you both have in both situations is two central midfielders whose job is to do some defending and some attacking. And if you look at some of the numbers for them, Andre obviously stands out massively when it comes to the attacking side, the passing in particular. His passing completion rates are through the roof. And then
I'm touching on that in the chat. prepared this earlier.
Oh, yeah. It's almost like we're a team here. And then Ezequiel Fernandez is the dual monster. Like, if you look at defensive dual numbers in terms of the numbers he's making and the percentage that he's winning, in both defensive and offensive areas of the pitch is remarkable. But the knock on Ezequiel Fernandez is that his passing numbers are as bad as the dual numbers are as good. So then it becomes, if you think about players who people maybe know, you think someone like Emmanuel Ugarte, based of the guys who we were linked from in the summer, he was probably the most defensive, aggressive six of them all. And Fernandez is more in his mold. And then Andre is he's been touted as being very Thiago-like, and I think that would be a very fair comparison. So it's two different ways
of doing it. Not a bad player to be compared to, really.
No, exactly. And it's two different ways of doing the same position. And you think about which one would suit Liverpool's style better, but then you think about the makeup of the players that we've already got, which traits are we maybe missing more? And then you've got the two different ways of looking at it, and it'll be fascinating to see them up against each other.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching Andre in particular, personally. I am. Obviously, when he first came on the radar over the summer, like virtually everybody, I had never heard of him.
Yeah.
Come out of nowhere. And I generally don't overly look at South America because Liverpool don't tend to sign players direct from there. The last lad to arrive was Seb Coates, centre-half. For those who can't remember him, I don't blame you. I'm not surprised. Before that, Luis Leiva arrived from Gremio. A bit more successful, to be fair.
Yeah.
But we don't tend to sign players from that continent, from that region of the world. So I don't tend to pay too much attention. But since, obviously, many months have passed now since we got linked with him, and I've kept tabs on him, I've watched him, and kept looking at his data and things like that, and I am sold. I am interested in him. I do think Liverpool should go for him in January. I don't think he's specifically a Fabinho kind of replacement, but he could occupy the McAllister spot and probably play it. It feels harsh to say play it better than McAllister because I'm happy with what I've seen from McAllister so far. I just think McAllister wants more of a safety net to play his game, whereas I think he knows if I lose the ball and play my game here, I've got to then win it. I've got to regain it. Whereas, so I think he'd benefit from playing a little bit higher up, McAllister personally.
Agreed.
And then Andre would come in as the kind of six who's not ideal as a lone six, but considering he's going to be playing next to the centre a lot of the time, I think he's got the makeup in him to be a real control of Liverpool.
He has. And I think if you look at the ways that some teams have tried to target McAllister when he's played in the six, in terms of how they've tried to trap him, how they've occasionally been very aggressive with him on one side, tried to make him go the other way where he's not as comfortable. I think someone like Andre, he's more used to that. I think he's a little bit bigger. He's not massive, but he is a little bit bigger. He's very aggressive by nature. So I think he'll be able to deal with that a little bit better. And that will allow him, like you say, to play his football. And it's difficult with McAllister because I'm like you. I think that there is definitely merit in him playing as a deep lying guy. And I think that he's done a lot of good things that people maybe don't notice, which is the lot of the defensive midfielder for Liverpool, I guess. But I do think, like you, that if he was playing further forward, you'd be seeing more things from him. And it's a different, I think, to have him as only the deepest lying midfielder is maybe not to use him at his best. I think having him the ability to do both would help, and Andre would be that guy. Again, it comes down to, like we were saying, in terms of Andre has decent tackling numbers, but if you compare them to Ezequiel Fernandez, his are almost double. He is literally like an absolute monster. And if you think about the way that people were talking about Endo when he came in from Stuttgart, Fernandez feels like he actually is that. Like, obviously, the reasons why Endo hasn't been as good as the age, the difference in league, etc., etc. I think Fernandez is more that. And it comes down to, again, do you think that that part of the game is the most important thing we need to add to our midfields? But then, do you think his passing numbers can raise to a level of passability? Because, pun intended, because his percentage, I believe his percentage is around 72%. And
Fernandez.
Which is, well, I mean, when you compare it to guys who are in the 80s and 90s, it's pretty low. And for short passing, he's kind of all right. But then when he gets beyond medium and long, it drops off a cliff. And it's, you think about, again, what we're saying with McAllister and how teams are able to target him for certain things. I think that'll be something that they would try to target him. They would just put a wall in front of him and say, you can't get the ball through there. So I do think the Liverpool will probably end up going for Andre. I do think they will be able to have enough tackling ability in there. But I do also think that there will be a team, particularly a Premier League team or a European giant, who will go for Ezequiel Fernandez. And he'll go there and he'll be that dual monster. And he'll be like, oh, wow, this is a good guy. Where did Liverpool go for him? Like,
yeah, it'll probably be Benfica, Porto, Sporting or Brighton. One of them won't.
God, I hope it's not Brighton.
I know, they're just showing us all off, aren't they? But yeah, in terms of Andre, I do think he's... I really love the link. I really do, because I think Liverpool are finding it harder to find these gems in the market. I think a couple of years back it was easier to do that. Now kind of everyone's adopted the data and it's trickier to find an edge. So I think it makes a bit of sense to just go direct to source. Maybe now and then go straight to South America, pick off the gems there. Like, say for example, Real Madrid did with Rodrigo, with Vinicius Jr.
Chelsea doing it.
Yeah, Chelsea doing it, yeah. I mean, Barcelona did it with Neymar. The likes of Benfica and Brighton and Porto and Sporting, they all did it with, like, Luis Diaz. And I think Nunes was already in Spain, wasn't he, to be fair, playing for Almeria, I think, when he moved to Benfica. But generally, I think it's something I'm in favour of every now and then. And Andre looks like enough of an outlier to me to be worth exploring. And I think he is, as you say, similar to McAllister. Both similar height, similar build. Both predominantly insist on being on the ball compared to being defensive. But I think he's a bit less of a risk taker than McAllister, a bit less attack minded and a bit more focused on control, basically.
And again, I flag up the aggressive factor. I think if P comes to the league, he's going to be in a situation where teams are going to try and test him, as all new midfielders do. They try to kind of see if they're up to the physical challenge of the Premier League. I think he'll be up for that. Yeah. In fact, I think we might need to turn him down a little bit.
Yeah, well, he looks like he's kind of he's got that dog in him. I think that's what people say in it. He looks like he's got a bit of that in him, which is nice.
And I know that we don't often deal in speculation on this program, but another reason I want to watch the game is that it's alleged that Billy Hogan is going to be there as a guest of Fluminense. So,
well, that is interesting. The lad in charge of the lad, I mean, he's not a lad, is he? I mean, the president of Fluminense has actually come out and said a couple of months back that Billy Hogan contacted him and tried to get Andre, and it was kind of like, no, but we can talk in December if he wants. And once this match has kind of been played this season, it's not over, but it's not far from being over, you know what I mean? So he'll kind of come on the market, because they don't tend to stay in their home continent, these kind of players, when they start really shining and getting to a level where they're just good enough to come to Europe.
Yeah,
and Andre looks like that.
If they win, the cup for the first time,
then
his season's over. He's basically going to be on a party tour for the next couple of months.
Yeah, I know. But he looks like a real controlling presence. And, you know, as I said, in terms of his pass completion numbers, he's attempted so far this season 1,957 passes in the Brazilian Serie A, and he's misplaced 113. So that's a pass completion of over 94%.
Yeah.
Which, for perspective, I think last season, top of the Premier League was Rodri. This is midfielders. Rodri on about 91%. Andre's up at 94% at the minute. And obviously that offers no insight into, like, quality.
Or where in the pitch.
But it offers an insight into control and ball retention, and a lot of his passes are in the middle third.
Mm-hmm.
He is very Thiago, but with a bit less of the eye of a needle pass attached to his game. Like, say, for example, per 90, he's averaging about 94 passes per 90. Sorry, hang on. No, he isn't. He's averaging about 82 passes per 90, and about 6.7 of them are progressive passes. So that's a lot of passes that are kind of sideways and lateral and that, but that's his role, that the kind of player is. So.
And you'd love to see where those passes apply in the kind of shot-creating actions chain. So I imagine quite a few of those short passes are played to someone who then does play the dagger pass, if you like. So, and if you think about the makeup of the midfield at Liverpool, if he's playing alongside the likes of Gravenberg or a McAllister or a Szoboszlai or a Trent or a Van Dijk, there are plenty of people who can play those penetrative passes. So if he's playing the quick, short, technical passes that get them into position, and I do think that these passes are really underrated because they look simple. But the difference between a 5-yard pass to someone where it's a little bit behind them and it's a little bit slow and they have to turn their body away from goal to collect it and turn around, and then they realise there's a guy there and then they decide to go backwards. Or a 5-yard pass in space, in stride, into someone who can then look up and see the pitch in front of them. Just one of those makes a big difference. But if you chain two or three of them together, then suddenly you've got yourself a chance. And I think that is what the control that we're looking for. And that's the kind of game I think Andre can bring.
Yeah, well, again, if you look at the current Liverpool team, like, it's packed full of players who are attack-minded. And we touched on this kind of before the start of the season, really. But he would come in as a player who would kind of act as a bit more of a counterweight for the team, as a player who wouldn't always pass forwards. He would kind of dictate the tempo of the game and dictate the plays from deep as kind of a bit of a conductor, speeding up the game when necessary, slowing the game down when necessary. McAllister's got elements of that to his game, but I do think there's part of McAllister that just wants to shoot and post assists in the final third and things like that, whereas I think Andre looks like more of a natural, just a natural controller. He does it kind of innate out of his own. It's just what I remember a quote from Thiago saying. He said something like, "Running is not my thing. My job is to accelerate the game when necessary." And he said, "I would love to be like," I think he was talking about Nunes. "I would love to be like Nunes, who had shooting, just wanted to shoot, but it's never been in my nature to shoot from 40 yards." That's what Thiago said, and I think Andre looks again similar.
And you need one of everything in the football team. You can't have 11. Can you imagine a team with 11 Nunezes?
Exactly.
But going back to the Thiago comparison, I think again, what we saw a lot of time when Thiago was playing for Liverpool, if you had a midfield three of Thiago, Fabinho and Henderson, if you're an opponent, you know which one is going to be playing the penetrative passes, you know who's going to be playing the most passes. I mean, thinking back to last season, I remember doing shows where Thiago has, what was it, five times as many passes or touches as the other two midfielders?
Yeah.
Like, if you've got that as your setup, then defensively, from the opponent's perspective, it's really easy to target. Whereas if we're going to add someone like Andre into our mix, but we've also got a McAllister there, and you've also got a Curtis Jones there, and you've also got a Ryan Gravenberch there, then if someone tries to play the whole game plan of stopping one player, then we have other players who can do a lot of the similar things. And
yeah.
And it can be, they can take turns within a game to game. And again, it just gives you so much more depth and variety. And going back to what we were saying before about playing low blocks, we need that depth and variety. We need to be hard to game plan against.
Yeah. It kind of looks like Liverpool are kind of going towards the previous midfield departments, kind of control games through industry and like defensive endeavour and discipline and all that. It looks like we're moving towards an identity now where our next midfield will be a bit more like basically keep ball, as in like you can't get the ball off us. We're all so technically gifted, so clean on the ball and things like that we never lose it. And Andre would just kind of add to the dynamic that's been established already by McAllister, Jones, Elliot, Szoboszlai. And again, just going back to his nature as a player, like he's played just over 2,000 minutes in the Brazilian Serie A so far this season, and he's taken 10 shots. So he's obviously not going to score a few Steven Gerrard.
Not his bag.
No, he's kind of a pass master and another pass master to add to the group. So, I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself here. We haven't signed him yet, but
it's you can see why we're looking at him.
Definitely can see why we're looking at him. And it's going to be interesting to watch him on the weekend. But I think we'll kind of wrap up there. Maybe a bit of a shorter show this week. I've got no idea how long we've done. But it's a quiet week anyway, isn't it? I mean, Liverpool are just kind of getting back to that point where we're just winning steadily each week.
Yeah.
No overriding talking point, no dilemmas to discuss. But yeah, thanks for joining us, man.
No worries. Pleasure as always.
And we will be back next week. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you then.
You've been listening to Analyzing Anfield from the Liverpool Echo's Blood Red Channel.